The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to another edition of the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And again, I am at the National Club for a wine event with one of the top Ontario wineries, certainly for premium wine. It doesn't get much higher than this. Two sisters introducing. I have the winemaker, I have the owners, the CEOs, everyone is here. So we'll go around the room and do an introduction. Adam, why don't you say hi to everyone?
Thanks for having us. Happy to be here. My name is Adam Pierce. I'm the winemaker at Two Sisters Vineyards.
Hi, my name is Melissa Marotta Paolicelli, and I am one of the Two Sisters.
Nice. Hi, my name is Angela Marotta. I'm happy or proud to be Melissa's sister.
And
we're
nice.
Both the proprietors of Two Sisters Vineyards.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. So first off, guys, thank you so much. So Angela, then I'll start with you guys. And Adam, I got obviously a bunch of winemaking questions, things I want to talk to you about. But at first, I'll just say my own experience with Two Sisters. About 4 or 5 years ago, probably about four, a friend of mine had a bottle of it, and he'd gone and visited. I had never heard of you guys, and it was one of your Merlots, and I tried it, and I'm like, this is ridiculous. This was one of the best Ontario wines I've ever had. And what was rare was I don't usually get bigger, more opulent Bordeaux blends. It's just not something we do as much in Ontario, and that's what sort of struck me, was just this was something I hadn't really experienced much in Ontario. I was wondering if you guys could start, and Angela, I'll start with you. We'll just go back and forth, everyone. The decision to go in that direction, to go with Bordeaux blends, and to really just plant the flag there for you guys.
So we knew that when we did the testing and when we analyzed the terroir and, of course, the climate, we knew that it was the closest to Bordeaux. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to plant vines and varietals that we knew were going to grow the best within the terroir and the location that we were at. Also, those are wines that we love. And together with Adam, we knew that these were wines that we could potentially produce to be full-bodied reds. We wanted to produce wines that were going to be leading in the industry, at least helping bring focus to the Niagara region. And for us, you know, it's low yield. It's about 2.5 to 3 tons per acre. We age our wines 2 to 3, sometimes 3.5 years in barrel, and then hold them in bottle and have them age in bottle at least 2 years, which Adam can speak to a little bit more. So we tend to the vines very carefully, but those are the varietals that we really gravitated to and are a favorite of ours.
Was it at all a risk for you guys? And anyone can answer. And again, I have only two mics, so that's bad on me. So we're doing this Phil Donahue style. Was there a risk going in that direction? Because it's just something you don't really see that often. And certainly not with our climate, where, like, when I think of Ontario, I'll think of Cab Franc, I'll think of Pinot Noir. But I don't usually think as much about like Cabernet Sauvignon or Merlot.
Yeah, I think there certainly was risk, but I think it just shows ultimately the dedication of the family. You know, growing, we're all in on Bordeaux reds on our site. So, you know, 20 acres of Franc, 20 acres of Merlot, 20 acres of Cab Sauv. But we are lucky with our proximity to the lake and to the Niagara River. So we've got, when it's cold, but when it's warm. And we've got an early, you know, that convection between the lake and the river gorge gives us a little bit of an earlier spring and a little bit of a later fall. So, you know, I think in our opinion, if anywhere in the Niagara region, it was a good location to go all in on planting the vineyard completely to reds. I mean, we do rely on some other like-minded growers for where we source our whites, but yeah, there certainly was risk, and we have been exposed to that risk in cold years like winter 13-14.
Yeah.
But we've rebounded, and we're dedicated to the single varietals that we're growing.
I was wondering, and we could speak to this just about your sub-appellation. I believe Niagara River is the sub-appellation.
That's right.
And one thing I'm trying to do on this podcast is for listeners to realize that Ontario, it's not Ontario wine. It's not even Niagara wine. It's that each different sub-appellation brings its own expression, its own terroir. And I think once we do that, people will have more respect for Ontario wine because we don't do that with Burgundy. We know that Pommard is different than Volnay. But we... You know, I was wondering, and anyone can answer or go around, just the characteristics of Niagara River sub-appellation and just what makes that region different than others.
Yeah, 100%. And this isn't like we're grouping together, you know, large swaths of land. We're making very small regional wines, and we're really trying to sing the praise of Niagara River. We benefit from... we have a few different soil structures within our own site. We've got an old riverbed that runs sort of diagonally through our property. So we've got all the way from nice stony river rock soils to we've got some silty clay loam. We've got some really sandy site towards the south southeast of our property where we've got our Merlot growing. So we kind of have a, and we're still learning. You know, yeah. five years in since we've been open, but the vineyard was planted in 07, and we still learn a little something each year about our, you know, our vineyard. It's coming into maturity, but we're still getting a little bit smarter each year about how we want to do things and what clones are working better and what rootstocks are working better. We do have, I think next to St. David's or in comparison to St. David's, we benefit from the highest growing degree days each year. So we do have a warm site.
Okay, so in Niagara, you have more warm growing days than most of the other sub-appellations?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to paint us all with the same brush.
Yeah.
Certainly towards the bench and on top of the bench and towards that way, it's a little bit cooler. And mm-hmm. we celebrate those areas for what
Pinot Noir,
they do best.
Riesling, things like
exactly.
that.
Yeah. We purposely source Riesling and Chardonnay from there, but we want to grow reds and big reds where we feel they do best. And that we feel is in our appellation.
Melissa, how long has this winery been in the making for you guys?
Oh, goodness. So we planted our vines in 2007.
Yep.
And our first vintage, our first harvest was in 2010. Mm-hmm. And it's been an incredible, incredible ride for our family and along with Adam to committing to producing the best Ontario wines that we can. And that's something that we've definitely to this day held to our hearts that if we're going to do this, we're going to do this 110%, and we're going to be one of the ones along with all other wineries that are committing to producing fantastic wines in Ontario, that these wines can be put against wines around the world.
So 2007 was when you planted.
Yes.
And then 2000, what year, the first release was
2010. Yes.
So I want to go from before 2007. And what was the lead up to, like, you know, it just the impact of your father, Benny? I've read some stuff of you guys and just his influence on you guys with wine. But what made you decide, okay, it's time, you know, this is something we want to do?
Absolutely. So, I mean, for us, Niagara-on-the-Lake holds a very special place in our hearts. You know, going back from when my dad had come to Canada from Italy, there is one thing that he held close to him was tradition. And one of those things was winemaking. And he's had a love for wine and just, again, that holding on to something from where he came from.
Yeah.
And when we knew as a family that one day, God willing, this would be something that we'd want to do. And we pretty much were fortunate enough to be able to do it. The stars aligned and this incredible, magnificent piece of property came about. It used to be a peach orchard. Mm-hmm. And I remember driving all together and seeing this for sale sign, and we all looked at each other and said, okay, is this it? Are we going to do this? And we did. We jumped right in. And it's been amazing. And to be able to do this with my sister and Adam, it's been wonderful. It's been wonderful.
Anything you want to add there, Angela?
We followed our passion.
Yeah.
And we took on a level of risk.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes having those two combinations where there's so much passion involved. And of course, there's a culinary aspect as well. When you visit the winery, there's a restaurant, Kitchen 76. But when you share the passion that you have with others, and that is the foundation of the vision, and there is that level of risk that you take to make to bring that to the forefront. You have such a respect and such a sense of fulfillment when it all comes together. So that's something that we're feeling right now.
That's fantastic. Now, with you guys are a little bit different. A lot of other places, they focus on the tourism angle, on the experience at the winery. No one does it like you guys. And there's a lot of wineries I love. There's a gorgeous place to have lunch. I love Southwick. Like, I can go on and on and on from the tiny little organized crime where you'll get yelled at, you know, as she's pouring you wine. It's wonderful. But with you guys, it is so much more just about the entire experience. And I'm wondering, have you guys got any pushback? Because in the wine world, there is, you know, the cliche, the mythology of it's about the farmer and the dirt and the soil. And then at that point, we leave the wine alone and whatever it does, magically it's there. But you guys, you do put the focus in technology and innovation and in, you know, and using oak and new French oak. I'm wondering, has there been any pushback in the wine community?
I'll speak and then I'll pass it on to everybody else. It's Angela. You know, the market is so diverse and the people that visit the winery are so different. We've got various segments of, or you know, different, various segments of the population, of course, demographic that come to the winery that are all looking for something different. So I think the fact that we are very, much focused on the education of wine when they walk through the doors, that's something that they appreciate. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we try to make it very sensorial. So yes, it is, you know, a lot of what we do even in the restaurant is farm to table. We just do it at an elevated level. But again, Niagara, the Niagara region as a whole, all the wineries there, they all have something to offer to everybody. So we're just another option for them, for somebody that is just looking for something different. But again, you make a weekend out of it and they can have various experiences at all different wineries. But for us, it's an education first and foremost. I'll pass it on to.
Oh, just to add after Angela. So for us, you know, the thought of drinking wine, even amongst ourselves with our family and friends, it's not just about the wine. As much as yes, we focus on the wine, but it's not just about the wine. It's where you are, who mm-hmm. you're with, what you're feeling, the conversation that comes about when you're drinking wine, and we wanted to create a setting where people can enjoy that, as well as being somewhere that is beautiful. We did create a place that you feel a bit of Europe and you get that emotional connection with each other, with the setting. So that for us was something very, very important. It's about the experience of drinking the wine.
I would just only echo what Angela and Melissa said. And of course it does start when you walk in the door at Two Sisters, and why wouldn't it? It's all encompassing, but it also boils all the way back down to the dirt, right where we're, you know. So
yeah,
we are all, including the whole family, farmers at heart, and it does ultimately start with us, but it also ends with a, you know, an ultra. We're going for a, you know, really a beautiful experience in the end of our retail store and in our restaurant, but certainly it does start with the vineyard for us, and we don't shy away from. Certainly some modern technology that we employ in the winery, in the vineyard, but again, nothing that I think anyone would turn their backs on, but anything that can be a feather in our cap to ultimately produce bigger, better wines for us. We always, you know, respect the traditions of winemaking, but, you know, we're open to anything new and innovative. And
yeah, and I view you guys more as Bordeaux versus other places where Burgundy. Where Burgundy, it's impossible to get in anywhere. And they don't even want you to be around. Bordeaux, which has similarities, but at least it's bigger, grander. When you get in, it's certainly impressive. Actually, Adam, I saw this quote of yours, and I've never seen this before, because it's totally true, but I think other winemakers don't want to say it because they want to keep the mythology. There's just the farming mythology, which, again, wine starts with the dirt. It starts with the farming. But he said, we're not trying to grow grapes. We're trying to grow wine. And I had never seen that quote before. So why don't you expand on that? I found that interesting.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I was just able to put it on paper, but I think that is ultimately what we're all trying to do, really. But that is the goal. We're not just growing. It doesn't end for us at grapes. We're grape growers first, but you know, ultimately we are trying to grow wine. So as we know that you can't make good wine out of poor grapes. So, yep. You know, we're our first focus is having an ultra premium vineyard site and really sparing no expense and doing what we have to in the vineyard to ultimately end up with. We're making premium wines, and we can't make premium wines without premium fruit. So we are indeed growing our wines, not just our vines.
What do the awards mean? I'm sure, by the way, I don't have all of them. I know in 2016, Two Sisters won the Deluxe Startup Award at the RBC Canadian Women Entrepreneur Awards. I know Wine Align, you guys won in 2018, National Wine Awards of Canada, awarded their wineries the best small winery in Canada. We were small when I saw them, like, what? They're, but I mean, I know in terms of the amount of cases, yeah, in terms of production. But what does that mean for you guys just in terms of just, you know, recognition that you're doing it right and also helping you sell in the market?
I'll say a quick, I mean, maybe I'm the wrong person to ask. Of course, proud of the RBC Entrepreneurial Award. That's fantastic. And then I think it's important for us to see that we're it's a bit of validation to show that we are doing things the way that we envisioned. And certainly we're appreciative of the early recognition of where we've been. But, you know, then sometimes for me, I think, you know, ultimately the best rewards are just watching, and I know it sounds sappy, but just watching people enjoy, you know, like tonight for our dinner, watching people enjoy the wines. Those are the ultimate rewards and the ultimate accolades for
it's
for
like me. The Oscar speech. You're just happy to be nominated.
Well, for sure. Yeah. And of course, who doesn't like to get a gold medal or a recognition? That's really nice. But ultimately, it ends with us with, you know, the end consumer. When we see people happy and enjoying the product, that's, I think, the ultimate goal for us. But
yeah.
But it's been, we've only been open for 5 years. So certainly for us last year, the epitome was the Small Winery Award. That was unexpected. And we were certainly pleased to receive that. That was fantastic.
Melissa, Angela?
So, you know, we all have families, and between my sister and I, we have 7 children.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You own a winery and you have 7 children. I'm assuming either a fleet of nannies or your husbands or partners are at home full time. That's busy.
Yes, it is. So we have amazing support from our family. And for us, this winery is our 8th child. So blood, sweat, and tears. That's all I can say. It really has... It takes, you know, an army to kind of, you know, raise a family as well as doing this. But for us, with our children, again, it's creating a legacy as well for them for the future. We're just doing the hard work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's we've been raised to not be afraid of hard work. That's kind of like something that we've had within us since we were very, very young, having jobs our first time when we were, I guess, 14 years old, from what I remember. And moving forward with this just seemed very natural to us, and putting in 110%.
I'll just add a quick thing from the consumer's perspective. I think it just validates that consumers getting true value for the wines that they purchase and they enjoy at Two Sisters Vineyards. And that to us is gratifying for them, knowing that it's true value, and the recognition of it through the awards is validation of that.
I forget which one of the two of you, if it was Melissa, Angela, which one of the two of you had this quote. What we have learned is that no matter how the economics change, we will not compromise on the quality or vision we have for our brand. How difficult is it to live up to this quote and still be economically viable? Because, you know, if your goal in life is to make lots of money, you don't go into winemaking. So how difficult is it to live to that mantra and still have a healthy bottom line?
Well, I think that's the longevity of any business, is recognizing what the vision is and staying true to that vision. The economics change for sure. Markets change, but the quality, the perception of quality doesn't change. So it doesn't matter how the market change, quality is viewed the same way. So when you continue on with the same quality, it just gives your business longevity through any economic change. And that's something that we've experienced, and I know that we'll continue to experience, because it's such a, you know, it's an ever-changing market. And of course, there's various factors that are out of our control. we just, you know, at the end of the day, if we need to reduce or, you know, scale down on production, we will, but we won't falter or, you know, reduce or have the quality of the wines affected at all.
All right. I have more like wine and some geeky questions. I'm going to try to keep them to a minimum. So we'll go a little bit more. Oh, no, there's not the wine geeky question yet. You're handing the mic over to Adam. And also, Adam, at some point, I do want to know just some of your thoughts about the differences of working in Niagara versus Australia versus BC. But take me to the day when, Kelly Ripa? And I always get all the shows mixed up because at one point it's Good Morning America, but then it's not that anymore. And it's... Okay. Yeah, Ryan and Kelly. Because, yes. You know, is Michael Strahan then? Is he not? I mean, I always get confused about who's who. So I was wondering if you could just take me back to that day when they came to celebrate 60th, was it a 20th birthday or 60th birthday?
Oh, yes. So their son, Michael, it was his 19th birthday, and mm-hmm. he was finally legal to drink.
In Canada. Not the United States, in Canada.
So, I mean, it was wonderful. We had the support of Niagara Tourism, Niagara Tourism, and they basically came to us and said, we want to experience a winery. And they selected us, and it was a wonderful, wonderful day.
The excitement came with the helicopter.
Were you worried about the fungus? Maybe they could get rid of any of the fungus.
No, we have a helicopter pad. And
of course
purposely,
you have a helicopter pad.
And we get helicopters every once in a while. But this was the start of the season. So when they came and we saw the helicopter come down and we heard like just the sound of the helicopter and then all the cameramen coming around and cueing us in to walk towards the helicopter. It was very surreal because we knew at that point this was going to be viewed throughout North America. And Kelly Ripa, Ryan Seacrest are just, they're as you see them on the show, that's the way they are. I mean, they're so charismatic, wonderful personalities. You connect with them immediately. And that's how we felt. We were family from the get-go. It was just amazing.
All right, so... Now that I've learned you have a helicopter pad, I have a follow-up question. And by the way, when we were, when the National Club, we did a tour and we came by and had a great time. Victor Newman from Young and the Restless. Yes, he was at the restaurant.
He comes often.
Oh, does he really?
Oh, he's friends with my dad. Oh, okay. I mean, I can't even tell you. They're kindred spirits.
Oh, okay. Because we saw him in the corner like, oh my God, there's Victor Newman just sitting there quietly.
We ship him wine to his home in California.
Oh, it's wow. Amazing. Yeah. First off, that's fantastic. You're shipping the Ontario wine to California. I don't know why. That makes me a little bit happier. What are the any other celebrities that have arrived via helicopter or been in the restaurant? I mean, now that you know, we got Kelly Ripa, we got Seacrest, we got Victor Newman. Is anyone else of note?
Oh, we had the Maple Leaf team.
Oh yeah,
we had their management.
Clearly, they
team.
Came right before Game 7.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, the World Cup. We had soccer players. Yeah, we had the World Cup, soccer World Cup. We get athletes all the time. We get actors and actresses in all the time.
Yeah.
Newscasters, of course, various media personalities.
Tim Boland from CHTV. I saw he was doing a big thing. He's a friend of mine.
Yes.
His wife has been on this podcast, Elizabeth Davies. She's got a wine consignment company. So, the helicopter pad. I appreciate. I like that.
Yeah.
All right, I'll go back to the nerdy stuff for a second. I'm just curious, Adam, just in terms of working in the fields, the viticulture, any sort of like if you could pick the big striking difference between BC versus Niagara versus Australia. Is there one or two things that kind of stick out?
Sure. I'll tackle BC versus Australia, which is you know, it's we have our work cut out for us in Niagara for sure. It's probably more difficult to grow grapes in we've got more humidity.
Yeah,
we've got more extreme weather. I mean, when you're in BC, you're the tip of the Sonoran Desert. Ultimately, it's arid. When the sun comes in the summer, it's sunny and dry. Ultimately, usually till harvest starts. But the defining differences for me, which is what define the regions, are we benefit. We ultimately have some seasons. BC is hot in the summer and then it just gets cold, vines shut down.
Yeah.
We benefit ultimately from having a beautiful fall, and that's where we can capture some really nice phenolic ripeness at slightly lower alcohols, and we can reach, you know, phenolic maturity And that's what I think differentiates with being able to get our wines in bottle with some just a different product, you know, with a little more structure, a little more acidity, ultimately maybe a little more longevity, a little less alcohol. So again, it's just a different, depending on what you're looking for. Bigger, ultimately big wines coming from BC. You know, a lot drier out there. We don't have to deal with, you know, we're heavily underdrained in Niagara. That becomes an issue almost every year at various times in the year of rainfall and having our vineyards drained. And we have, you know, a lot of outside disease pressures from funguses and rots with higher humidities and, you know, heat and humidity usually don't go well together for a vineyard. So that is, you know, so we're ultimately just thinking about pulling leaves and having airflow and sun exposure and, you know, doing what we have to do, keeping a, you know, reasonable crop. Those are really the ultimate differences. Really is just kind of a bit of the humidity and the heat. You know, growing degree days are a little bit different.
And what about, you worked just a little bit in Hunter Valley, but you did some work in Margaret River in Australia. Any of just like your sort of like striking memories of working there?
It's sort of the same. It's sort of ultimately the same deal down there. You know, when I was in the Hunter Valley, it was the first only 6 weeks, but it was the warmest weather they'd had since record keeping. And it was, you know, nighttime lows of 45 Celsius.
Oh, my God.
You know, vineyards just, vines don't grow. I mean, you're shutting down at ultimately that temperature. So we think some places have it easier but it's, you know, we all have all regions have their challenges. It just depends, you know, what they are. So that's a beautiful area to grow grapes as well. But, you know, they were dealing with extreme heat at that time. You know, we deal occasionally with extreme cold, you know, which can affect sensitive varieties like Merlot and Syrah and Sauvignon Blanc, things like that can be affected. And so kind of the exact opposites, but we all have our work cut out for us. You know, farming isn't easy. So
one thing that I appreciate about you guys, and we'll get into more just the wines. Some of your wines are more expensive than I think what the average person is willing to spend. And when you realize how much work goes into it, it makes sense. It's not like, oh, we're making a ton of profit off this wine. Where, you know, the costs are in the bottle. But the one thing I've liked is Stay Red that I've tried at restaurants, I've tried here at the National Club is less expensive. And what I appreciate is just the amount of effort that went into that wine kind of shows you the potential for the top level stuff is even if more your more entry level still has such complexity to it. I was wondering if you just talk about that wine.
Yeah, 100%. Like I was, you know, that's sort of a gateway drug wine for us.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're conscious that not all of our price points are conducive to, you know, buy the glass pours. And of course we want to be available in some restaurants. So it makes sense for us to have a licensee only wine. And of course the exact same thought process and blending and selection process goes into those wines as they do all of our tier wines. We ultimately won't, you know, the family is dedicated to, we're not putting anything in bottle that we wouldn't stand behind 100%, and that goes for licensee only wine. So they're getting the same, you know, we're same harvest date, same low yields, late picking, still the same time in barrel. I mean, portions of that wine, our licensee wine ends up, you know, almost 3 years plus in barrel. So we've given it all the same care and attention to detail. So it ultimately over delivers at
the price point,
and that's the goal.
Yeah, I think that wine absolutely, if you find it by the glass in a restaurant, you know, the Estate Red, it's definitely one to get. I think it over delivers for the price point. I want to end this with just your favorite, if there is your favorite movie scenes involving wine. I want to get to that in a second, but the last sort of serious question is, you know, because I have no children and I don't spend money on technology, I spend my money on wine. So, you know, I don't blink an eye. I think, you know, your Riesling is funky. Your Merlots, it's some of the best Merlots in Canada. I'd put it up against the top stuff in Okanagan. And your blends, like, you guys do an excellent job doing something that not a lot of people do, which is, we started the interview, is you specialize and you do the Bordeaux blends well. I was wondering if you could just explain to people, okay, you're not buying a case all the time. We get it. But just sort of explain why these wines, why they deserve to be the price that they are. Because I think for people that are just getting into wine, which is part of what this podcast is about, I think people need to sort of understand all the time and attention that goes in from the moment the grape is there to the moment it's in bottle.
That's a good question. And and again, this is about the education of wine when they walk through our doors. Again, it's about farming. There's so much we put into the farming of the vineyard, and we don't outsource the management. So we have our own vineyard supervisor, manager, handle or tend to the vines. And of course, we've got our contractors that do the labor works. But again, we're 2.5-3 tons per acre. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that goes on to maintain those vines. We cut down a lot of fruit. We barrel age at least 3 years, sometimes, you know, 3.5, depending on the label and varietal. But there's a lot that goes into each and every production. And every vine is tended to, like by hand, maybe 10 times throughout the year.
Say that again.
Every vine is tended to by hand at least 10 times. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of attention that's put through from the vineyard into bottle.
Melissa, anything you want to add?
So I think it's just for us, it's that commitment to quality that we've really honed in on for us. And that's kind of almost a mission statement for us. As Adam said, we don't put anything into bottle that we don't feel is represents what Two Sisters is all about. And, you know, even in terms of the equipment that we have, it's all state-of-the-art equipment from Italy. We have our barrels from France. Again, Adam selects the best of the best that he can get his hands on. So it's, again, that commitment to quality that resonates for us.
Where would you like to be, like, in 5 years?
On an international level, if they're thinking of Canadian wines, who I hope that at that point it does gain a lot more attention on the worldwide front. That Two Sisters Vineyards is mentioned all the time within that same conversation.
Mm-hmm. It's a great goal.
Yeah, I agree. So when you think of fantastic Canadian wines, our name comes top of mind.
Yeah. Adam, what about you just in terms of playing around? Like, I know, I think I saw a video you guys were doing. Was it like a sparkling Cab Franc?
Yeah, we just actually released it about 10 days ago and it's already sold out.
Yeah.
But we're having it tonight at the dinner.
Oh, nice. Because I'm not going to lie to you. It's been a long time since I had a spark. I don't even remember the last time I had a sparkling Cab Franc. But yeah, 5 years, just you in terms of where the wines are, where the expression.
Yeah, certainly. I don't think we want to. I mean, I think we have a nice portfolio right now. I don't imagine we're expanding continually on it, but it's more about just really focusing and getting everything that we're doing it even better. You know, we're going to be farming better. As I said before, we get a little bit smarter every single year. We learn something. We're never complacent. So, you know, we're always striving to do better each and every year. And I think we've continually done that actually this year, to this point as well. So, you know, I think each year the wines are getting a little bit better. Hospitality is getting a little bit better. We're still a young company, so we're growing and adding where we have to. I mean, as Angela Melissa said, it would be nice. It's nice for the international recognition, but I was just saying this to someone yesterday that I hope by the time I retire that our domestic consumption of Canadian wines and Ontario wines has reached a reasonable level, because that's what I'm ultimately. I've seen it come up just in the short time I've been in the industry, and you know, I would love to see that come into much greater numbers and more support and more accessibility and all of the above.
Agreed. BC does a better job for whatever reason. Their market, they buy their own. It's easier to sell BC wine to BC people than Ontario wine to Ontario people. Game of Thrones is on right now. By the time this episode's released, it'll be done. So, man, I wonder what that's going to look like. I'm a big Game of Thrones fan. And the only reason I bring that up is, to me, the single greatest wine scene in terms of consumption of wine in any movie or TV show is Cersei. Especially a couple seasons ago when she basically blew everyone up. What's that? Yeah, you want
the. I want to drink my wine from a chalice.
I know, it looks
with jewels on it.
Yeah, a bejeweled chalice. But yes, she's basically blown up, you know, thousands of people. And there's that shot of her where she's got just a little grin as she just takes a smug sip of wine, and she could not be happier. Does anyone have here either a favorite scene or a favorite wine movie? I'm making it a wider category because if I make it specific, if you do have a specific one about favorite wine scene, please feel free to throw it out there.
So there is a movie that comes to mind, and it's Big Night.
Yep.
with John Turturro. Is it? But is it John Turturro?
John Turturro and the guy
Rossellini.
Yeah, yeah.
And
there's someone else in that. This is the worst part of the pod. Now we're just like, wish we had IMDb.
Stanley Tucci, which is who I love him as well.
Yeah,
and it's a great movie because again, it's a celebration of wine and food, and then of course they realize they're not making any money. But that's, you know, it all boils down to the passion, and yeah, it was just, anyway, it was a great film. I loved that.
Melissa, anything to add?
Yes, actually, it's funny that you mentioned the Merlot. So the Merlot right now is drinking beautifully, and I'm loving it.
Mm-hmm.
And I always compare our Merlot to Sophia Loren. So although it's not a movie, she's a very sultry actress, very sexy and voluptuous. And kind of I compare that to our beautiful Merlot.
That's why you're the head of marketing and sales. You took my question and you brought it back to the product. Melissa, that was very, very well done by you.
Thank you.
Adam, anyone that comes to mind?
I don't really. I'm one of the five or six people in the world that haven't watched Game of Thrones either. So I can't comment on that. And I don't, you know, I've seen all the Sideways and the Bottle Shocks,
yeah,
and the Mondo Vinos, and all the films, but I don't.
It's impossible not to drink wine. I was watching one of the Saw movies last night. I wasn't even planning on drinking, but I'm like, I'm just watching. I'm like, okay, screw this.
Yeah, you know? For sure. And you're popping something while you're watching.
Yeah,
and
take it, Angela. Yeah.
But I want to say, so whenever I'm watching a film and they are drinking wine, they're never drunk. They're savoring it.
I know.
So anytime you see a movie where people are drinking, they're drinking other stuff.
Yeah.
But when they're drinking wine, it's like, it's a special moment. They're savoring it. It's romantic. It's melancholy. It's so many emotions, but they're just savoring it.
It's not casual. By the way, okay, I didn't mean to do this. Now I'm just going to go off on a bit of a rant. I want to get your thoughts. You know what I can't stand? You know on a TV show or movie? I poured myself a glass of wine, and cuts to 20 minutes later, and it looked like they've only drunk a little bit. I'm like, who does that? And when someone says, we're here for one glass. No one's ever there for one glass. It's so unrealistic. I can't stand when I see that. It's like, look at you with better self-control than me. Or The Sopranos. I can't watch more than a couple of The Sopranos. I have to open up, you know, I need a Chianti. Or
James Gandolfini, his hands were as big as a glass.
Yeah.
You couldn't even see the wine in that glass.
Yeah. It was Ruffino. I think they crushed a lot of Ruffino. Listen, Angela, Melissa, Adam, really appreciate you guys taking time to sit down with us. We're about to have a Two Sisters event here at the National Club. And I was a big fan before I met you guys. I was a fan of the wines even before this event, even before I came on a tour of the National Club. But for people out there, websites, phone numbers, addresses, if they're going to come to Two Sisters, where do they need, where should they go? Where do they need to access? Melissa, you did the Sophia Loren answer. I feel this one's for you.
Boom. So you just visit our website, so www.twosistersvineyards.com. Online, you can order wines. Within Ontario, we do offer complimentary shipping for 4 bottles or more. And you can book tours. You can view our experiences. You can book at our restaurant, Kitchen 76, as well, through Open Table that's connected. And so everything's online. Just enjoy our website. Take a look at it.
Guys, thank you so much. Adam, really, really appreciate you as well joining the podcast.
Happy to be here. Looking forward to a good night tonight.
Yeah.
Thanks again.
Thank you guys so much. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and wherever good podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.